All right, let's do this. How are you? What the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Knicks? What the fuckocrats? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Welcome to the struggle. Welcome to the show. This is a wrestling show, man. This is a wrestling show. Today, that's what I think. I'm wrestling with this new guitar, goddammit. Wrestling with it. It sounds great, but it's hard to play, man. And I got to get it. I got to get the hang of it. I love it. I'm not saying I don't love it. Sometimes you wrestle with who you love and what you love and with who you are. I would say most of the time. For me, anyway. I don't know what you're about. Thora Birch is on the show today. You all know Thora Birch. We all know her. We love her. Come on, man. She's currently on The Walking Dead, which airs Sunday nights on AMC. You remember her from American Beauty, of course, Ghost World, other things. That was some wrestling. Little bit of wrestling. I mean, I could tell you more about it before we talk to her specifically. But I was happy to see her. Happy she came over. So here's what's happening. The cold, first. The last time I talked to you, I was sweaty. And the last time I talked to you is before the Joe Biden surge. That guy's addled, man, addled. What a tragic series of events we're having. Fucking pathetic. The whole goddamn thing. Bernie, clear as a bell. It's like it's a fucking joke. Look, man, I don't know what I'm going to be able to do. I really don't. I do know that my special is coming out Tuesday. I'll talk to you on Monday about it, but people in the press got it yesterday. I'm pretty fucking proud of it. I'm glad you guys are going to see it. I've shown some friends the thing. Gotten some good feedback. I don't have many friends. I showed one friend. And my producer, haven't heard from Brendan yet, but Judd said he liked it, had some nice things to say about it. He wanted to see it early. He's earned that opportunity. But I'm excited you're going to see it. I'm excited about it. Looks different than most specials. Shot by the inimitable Lynn Shelton, who also wants me to inform you. Apparently, to her ears, when I talked about my cold, I was riding it out alone, but I was being cared for. She made me soup. She felt my head. She took my temperature. She got me stuff from the supermarket, medicines. So I don't want to sound like I'm some guy out in the wild on my own, out there on the edges of the cold front. By myself, she felt like I had revised history, excluded her from the narrative. She made me soup. And she took care of me to it. Okay, all right, I'm done with it. She did. She helped me out. Thank you. So look, I ended up, the guy who I sent that text to refresh your memories, basically saying that he's shitty and his wife is shitty after he stood me up a second time. I groveled over text and, he said it's not a problem. We ended up having lunch the other day and it was lovely. We talked about stuff, about movies, about what we've always talked about the few times we've hung out. I don't think he told his wife about it, which is good. I explained again that it was a bad day and I was on steroids for my back and I was angry, but it was fine. And I'm glad because I enjoy him and I enjoy his work and his wife's. No, I'm not. I'm still not going to say who it was. You can guess. But anyway, so that worked out. Maybe I'll read more of your emails another time. Okay. All right. Good. Moving on. So I went to a secret clubhouse meeting last night for the first time in months with my buddy Jerry. And got to talking. I'm a little consumed, man. I'm consumed. You know, there's a funny thing my brain does as we head into true authoritarianism with little hope on the horizon, but some excitement. Maybe. I'm not saying it's over. Hey, you know, if we can possibly exchange one mentally addled fucking devil for a mentally addled okay guy, I guess that's America. But maybe something surprising will happen. Maybe the momentum will shift and something fucking spectacular will happen. Huh? But point being, you know, I fester about bullshit and I'm doing okay for myself and I'm happy with the work I'm doing. My special's airing. I'm about to start shooting glow. I'm challenging myself on a lot of levels. I'm trying to wear different glasses occasionally. The Aretha Franklin movie was exciting. I'm just saying things are going well, but I still, especially with my comedy, because I put so much of my heart and mind into the goddamn stuff. It's life or death for me, man. It still is. That's the tone of the thing. A year and a half, 2 years, I worked on that stuff that's in the special. And my fear is it'll just disappear into the churning cloud, into the hungry ether, and dissipate into a million pieces that reorganize themselves as one occasionally for somebody sitting somewhere. But that's fine. But I'll judge myself against the more successful sorts. Hey, man, everybody likes them. Not everybody likes you. I've never been the everybody likes you kind of guy, but sometimes I still find room in my heart and my mind to resent and spite more successful people that I like. So I've got to wrangle that shit, man. And then I realized the other day, like most of these cats and kitties, as the great Lord Buckley would say, most of these cats and kitties are 20 years younger than me. They're 35, 36, these babies. 37, maybe. 38, perhaps. These cats and kitties. I'm 56. They somehow manage their talent on the natural arc of life trajectory. I'm in the fucking Hail Mary pass trajectory. I am the made it in the second half guy. The final quarter, I hope not. But I can't judge myself on sort of well-managed people who had enough of their shit together to be career-focused. And they come up in a generation where they realize their brand, they realize they are one, they realize how to maneuver the content platforms and to sort of like control and put their talent out there in beautiful ways that aren't, you know, just sort of fucking throwing ropes out of a hole. It's a predominant form of my expression is if I can just get this rope to hook onto something up there outside the hole, maybe somebody will see the fucking rope. But I'm out of the hole. I've been out of the hole for a while, climbed up out of the hole. But I'm constantly rappelling. That is a double entendre. But these younger cats and kitties, they know what's going on because they got their shit together at a younger age than I did. So I just have to be grateful and appreciative of the people that I have that dig me and understand me and not turn into it like it. I just want to fuck up my happiness, folks. That's all. I just want to fuck it up. I've just barely figured out how to handle it. And there's part of me that just, you know, immediately is like, it ain't enough, dude. It ain't enough. But listen to this. Subject line. Fuck, man, you saved my life. Hey, Mark, a few years ago, I sent you an email entitled 27-year-old pill guy, 2 months clean. You probably get a ton of these, so I don't expect you to remember. But for me, that single email and response helped push me onto a path to turn my shit around. I asked you how you got sober. I had no money for rehab, and I wanted to see if you thought rehab was a key thing for your recovery. I was lying when I told you I was 2 months clean in my email. In fact, I was deep in the addiction. You emailed me back with some hard truths. The fact you didn't bullshit me with a fluffy response really reinforced the fact that it's all on me to save myself. I realized the things that were going to help me were ready for me to utilize. You told me if I really want to kick drugs, I needed to, quote, just start doing the things you know you need to do, unquote. You told me to bite the bullet and detox all the shit that's been killing me. And then you advised me to go to some meetings and listen. I printed that response out and kept one in my car and taped one to my bathroom mirror. I've now been clean since 2/14/2019. I went to meetings. I found a great sponsor, and I found the will to live. As dramatic as that sounds, it's true. I was real suicidal there a bit. You helped save my life. I just want you to know how special you are when you take the time to email your addicted fans a few words of encouragement. I'm truly, truly thankful you reached back out to me. I don't want to put the burden on your shoulder to save everybody who emails you, but fuck, man, I owe my new life to you and your amazing fucking email. They were words from beyond the abyss that it's possible to do this. Thank you so fucking much, Mark. You know, it's like, who cares? You know, it's like, I fucking get out of my dumb head. You know, that's the beauty of the thing, man. That's the beauty of the thing. I don't want to be anybody else. I never did, never wanted to. There have been times where I wanted everyone to understand me more, and I couldn't understand why everybody didn't just get what I was doing. But I don't really care. That's that. So now, Thora Birch, I ran into her husband. She, you know, she'd come up as a possible guest a lot in the past. A few times it just didn't work out. I ran into her husband at the Comedy Store. He was like, she's a huge fan of the show. We both are. She really wants to come on. So, like, I didn't know a lot about her, but I was, like, open to it because, you know, I like her. I dig Thora Birch, and I wonder what her life was like. I knew that she had a difficult past in the way that I knew both her folks were involved with adult films back in the 70s. I've actually... You know, sadly, I remember her mom from Deep Throat very specifically. But, you know, that's her life. It's not, you know, my life. So, but I thought there was an interesting story there. And if she was ready to come on the show, she was ready to tell it. When she got here, it was tense. You know, it felt a little tense. And, you know, I did what I always do. And I kind of really stayed open through the whole thing. But we did it, and we did okay, and there were points where I didn't think she was emotionally comfortable to deal with some of this stuff, but this is my conversation with her, and I was happy that she's doing okay and happy to see her. She's currently on The Walking Dead, which airs Sunday nights on AMC. So this is me talking to Thora Birch. Try the coffee?
I did.
How is it?
It's nice. It doesn't have any of that, like, bitterness. It's a perfect
medium. I made it?
It's a perfect medium.
Good.
Yeah, I commend you.
I forget. Like, I never know what's going to happen when, you know, I ask people if they want coffee, and then if they say yes, then I'm sort of like, all right, well, it's going to be a bit of a production. Like, I have to boil water.
Right.
And I have to.
There's too many steps.
Yeah, and then it comes out pretty good.
I understand that it is a little bit of a crapshoot, too, though, because every morning my husband makes the coffee.
Yeah.
And he never makes it consistently.
What
like,
is
it's the always, it always comes back, like, not sweet enough.
Oh, really?
Or too sweet, or, like, not enough, you know, coconut creamer or too much coconut cream. He can never get a formula down. I'm almost at the point where I'm like, honey, I'll just go get it. But why would I do that? I'm too lazy in the morning.
Right. And he makes it, though?
Yeah. That's like, a routine, like coffee and news. Oh, wait. A little closer.
Okay. You can move it into.
We have a coffee news routine.
A coffee news routine?
Yeah, coffee news routine.
Where do you get the news? On your phone? You just, like, walk into the phones and figure it out? Wait, now, before I ask that, what method are you using to make the coffee?
We have a coffee maker. So
like a
standard drip. Drip. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Old school. Like an Orelco?
Yeah. I forgot the name.
No, like you put the filter in and then the bag.
Yes, you put the
slide
brown,
the thing in.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Scoop
good.
In the grinds.
Yeah. Good. Like old timey.
Yeah.
Not too fancy.
No.
And where are you getting your news?
All over. I mean, mainly, you know, we'll put CNN on probably just on the TV, but then we read like the news on our phones.
Just sit there and panic.
Just yeah,
with
it's
the rest of us.
Pretty much. It's like it's a really
yeah.
There's I don't know. You kind of wake up with a certain amount of optimism, and then you know, 10 minutes later, you're like, oh right, never mind.
Yeah, we're gonna die of a virus. Yeah. There's no, there's like right when there's even a smidgen of hope.
It's just like you don't feel like you can believe anything anymore. Like, were they really burning cash because that was the only method of stopping an airborne disease? Come on, I know that.
Yeah, right. What were they doing?
Like they were burning cash in China or
really?
Something like that. Yeah, I'm like, I don't think that has anything to do with the virus.
Wow, what does that even mean? They were burning cash.
That's what I'd
like
to know.
You read that this morning?
Not this morning. Like, I think it was 4 days ago.
Wow.
And I was like, no, that's a huge story. Why don't we get more into that?
So is it like some sort of a mystical approach to the
mystical
to the pandemic?
I don't know.
Burning money?
Their excuse was, you know, well, you know, people touch money and blah,
blah,
blah. But like, think of all the other things that we touch.
Right? I get it.
Knobs, like doorknobs.
Sure.
Are they
knobs,
all going
to
go?
Everything. Yeah. How is it traveling? But cash.
Car doors.
They were burning cash.
That has nothing to do. It's insane. That must be.
I think about money.
Wanted to do that.
No, I think about money all the time. About dirty money.
Dirty money?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, but we think about money. How many times it's changed hands? Like any bill you have? Yeah, you know, and who carries bills anymore? I do. I always carry money.
For sure. But then again, I kind of subscribe. I like cash.
Yeah.
But I subscribe to the George Carlin view of things where it's like you need a certain amount of germs to keep your
I think that's true.
Immunity
a certain
up,
amount.
You know?
No, absolutely. You can't avoid germs.
It's always
germs.
Like the healthiest, cleanliest person is going to wind up with a terrible disease.
I agree. You got to move through germs.
Yeah.
And if you're on a plane a lot, you're getting your share of germs.
Yeah, no, I don't like the recycled air on planes. I agree with you on
worst.
That. It's the worst.
And
yeah,
do you ever feel like, you know, when you get off a plane, you're sort of like, I'm covered in it.
I mean,
shower.
I think I had like a nosebleed last time I landed. I was
really?
Yeah, I was like, oh.
Dried out?
Yeah, just,
sinuses?
Yeah. And I was hydrating during the flight and everything. I don't know.
Didn't work?
Didn't work.
So the necklace, is that powerful?
No. Just a fan gave it to me. I liked it. It was on my bedside table.
Just curious.
I'm like, I'll just throw it on.
That's a fan present.
It was either the necklace or earrings, but I'm down to a single earring on all of my pairs. Like I always just lose one earring.
Yeah. So I know you grew up here, right?
Yes.
Whole life.
I was born at Cedar Sinai.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're like full California, full Los Angeles.
West Hollywood girl all the way, born and raised, stayed there for like until my early 30s and when I moved into Santa Monica.
Yeah. So like, but it's kind of interesting because your career, the whole thing, like we all know you from a certain couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then you sort of wonder like, oh, wait, where's she been?
Mm-hmm.
What's happening?
Right.
But also like I know that your history is sort of dug into the Hollywood of the 70s, and you like grew up in that, but specifically kind of porno 70s.
Well, I was born in 82. So by the time I came around, they were just leaving that.
Yeah.
But all of their, you know, my parents' prior experiences were wrapped up in that kind of world. I mean, they were on the road a lot. They did a few films, and
well,
I feel like their career was built
what's
up
different?
More than what it was cinematically.
It's just out there, so I'm kind of asking because or talking about it because I remember they were in movies that I saw when I was very young and they damaged me and they kind of reconfigured my brain.
Oh God.
But that's all right. But so by the time you
I'm sure they don't apologize. No, I'm kidding.
No. I'm not mad about it. I think it helped me on some level, but it was one of those things where I'm like 13 or 14 and someone had their parents' video cassette. But like, when did you first start to realize that they were in, you know, because your mom was in Deep Throat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so was your dad?
I believe briefly.
Oh.
I don't know. I've never
seen
it.
But they had, you never saw it? How could you?
I saw a couple of minutes here and there, but you know.
Why would you want to do that?
It's more like, I wanted to be open-minded enough to think that like, oh, I could handle this.
Yeah.
And a couple of minutes into it, I'm like, well, first of all, it's not funny.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. You know, maybe I'm good.
That's my mom. I don't need to know.
No, I didn't get to her.
Oh,
I didn't
good.
Make it to her.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, yeah, no, I don't think I want to go this
weird
far.
Old Harry Reams.
Yeah.
Doing
his, kind of bubbles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's got a rough opening. Do you mind if I smoke while you're eating? I think is the first line of that movie.
Yeah, let's not.
But I guess the question is, like, growing up in show business and having that element of show business in it, I mean, what do you first remember about your parents in terms of that?
I was older when it finally really hit me that, like, oh, no, they had actually been at porn. Because for me, it was just the family story was, oh, she had danced. You know, she had danced. And,
yeah. Your
was,
mom.
Yeah. She yeah. had danced, and she was on the road. And then also, she actually did... After all of that, she became a bodybuilder.
Right.
And she won, like, a number of just, like, but before the roided out, they're just, like, natural female bodies.
Right.
And, you know, she'd, do deadlifts and squats and things like that.
Yeah.
And she got a really, they were very, very in that health kick. You know, they did the raw food diet.
Are they
did
both
all
around?
That stuff. Yeah.
They're both still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are they still married?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're old enough to realize that the story was she was a dancer, so they'd gotten out of it and they probably did some touring of some kind.
I guess before, yeah, they did a lot of touring. They like had a show. She had a routine,
right?
And a show, and she would take it all around to all the clubs,
like strip clubs.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's then and other ones too. Like yeah. I know she did a lot up in San Francisco with the Mitchell Brothers at their theater.
Oh yeah,
and
at
stuff
the
like that,
their
so.
Weird showroom.
Right. They were they were all close for a while.
Because
again,
think,
all of that was before me, and so
right.
I didn't grow up in
that.
That.
No,
in,
I get it.
In
yeah.
That honestly, I think it was. Not until I was probably like in just my like preteens and early teens where I gleaned from other people. Like it was a little more than what
not
they're
just
telling
dancing.
You.
Yeah.
And so then I was, so it was like, but you know, there were only certain stories that I had heard, but nothing. They really tried to, you know, once
shield
she was
you
done,
from it,
she was done.
Yeah.
And she actually kind of went more the other way with me, a very like kind of a, you know, strict pursed almost, you know, very nearly conservative type of upbringing.
Oh, really?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, not in a religious sense.
Right.
Just more, you know.
Do you like discipline sort of like,
you
know.
Well, you know.
Try right and wrong.
Good. Yeah, manners.
Don't get screwed up.
Oh, absolutely. And like, you know, not you're not going to have sex until you're 82 and that kind of stuff.
Do you have brothers and sisters?
I have a younger brother, yes.
Yeah. How's he doing?
He's good. He's good there. He's finding his way. You know, he's a great kid. He's got a great heart, and he's really funny.
Yeah.
And
how old is he?
He's 28.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is he in show business?
He's dabbled, but more like behind the camera.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
So like but you started acting so young. So I mean, obviously somebody had invested in this idea, or was that you? Were you in?
Well, not at four,
right? So,
but my babysitter actually had. You know, my parents had a no television policy other than Sesame Street,
really?
And Mr. Rogers. But when the babysitter was over, that kind of went out the window. The first thing that happened was the television got turned on, and so you know, I would watch TV and I would start mimicking commercials, like the old Telly Savalas. Remember. Who Loves You, Baby,
yeah,
or something
who loves
like
you,
that.
Baby.
Yeah.
Kojak.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I just kind of remember, I think I was imitating the commercials.
Sure, yeah.
And so she thought that was just the most adorable thing in the world, and she decided to make our pastime that, you know, she would start taking me out on, like, auditions for commercials and stuff.
The babysitter.
Yeah. Well, she can, like, kind of talk. Well, she was close friends. It was a babysitter, but also close
kind of
friends with my parents.
Like
and
a
she
nanny-ish
was like, hey, what do you think of the,
Yeah.
And so, what do you think about that? And they were like, well, I, you know, we don't know anything about it, really, as far, you know, from a child actor. Type
right.
We don't know that world,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah,
we know a different type of show business.
Yeah.
And, so they're like, well, I don't know. You know, it seems like harmless enough. It'll keep her away from the TV. Great. But I started booking commercials like right away.
Wow.
So, and then that just kind of, after that, then it was the first TV show that I did for NBC called Day by Day.
Was it a guest
part? Gary David Goldberg.
Or
I
you're,
was a mini regular.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was the concept was that this lawyer yuppie couple decided to abandon their professional careers and open a daycare in their own home.
Right.
So I was one of their regular students.
Right.
And that
I
was
get
like
it.
The sassy blonde kid.
And did you love it?
I did. I remember my first commercial, which I think I was about 4 and a half, maybe just about to turn 5.
Yeah.
And my task was to sit in front of a open refrigerator with the contents spilled out all around me, and I had to eat a raw hot dog dipped in peanut butter, which I just thought was the most fantastic thing in the world. And I was like, this is work. Like, okay, if this is a job, this is amazing.
A raw hot dog dipped in peanut butter?
I mean, well, maybe the taste didn't, you know, but the just the process you know, the attention and being around a bunch of adults.
Yeah.
I always really kind of identified more with adults. I love kids my own age, too, but I cared what the adults had to say.
Sure,
I wanted to have a conversation with them. And so just, I mean, I loved it on a very kid-like, childlike level, like as a kid would like it. And
your parents were like, so they were on board with it, obviously.
They became on board, you know.
Yeah.
Because I started booking, and then it was always when it came time for school, it was very important to them that I was in public school, that I had that experience, and I kind of was like, okay, yeah, school's great. Well, I love it. You know, when am I going to get back to the set?
Right.
And so for a long time, that was kind of, let's bounce back and forth between a quote-unquote normal childhood and then go have some fun on a set.
Yeah. Were they doing any other types of show business? You know, outside, like when?
Not, no.
And did they? And then eventually they got involved in your career?
Yeah,
as
mama, dadagers, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Managing you?
For a period of time.
Yeah, not great time.
No, it was, honestly, they've been retired for a long time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah.
And do you have a relationship with them?
I do.
Yeah?
I do, yeah.
Oh.
It's
okay.
It's fluid.
Yeah.
It's fluid.
Yeah.
It's good.
So how does it unfold? Like to you did a lot of episodic work first or what?
Episodic of... and then, you know, more commercials. And then I was on that show Parenthood, the first iteration
the
film.
Right. Yeah.
And, several of your guests came from that.
Yeah. Like who else was on there?
Leo was on, I believe.
Arquette,
David Arquette.
Well,
I was somebody's kid.
Yeah.
I was one of the family's kids.
And do you remember all those guys?
Like, I remember bits and pieces. I remember kind of like offset playing on the lot. And like, you know, I kind of remember Leo running around with a water gun and stuff like that. Just like just little bits and pieces.
Innocent fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And when did you like start doing the movies?
9. Well, I did one small independent film when I was 6.
Yeah.
But I consider my first real film to be Paradise with Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith.
Yeah.
Directed by Mary Agnes Donahue, who's a really good writer as well.
Yeah.
And I played Billy Pike, and that role got me a lot of attention from film people. And,
yeah.
You know, so it was back in that era when the transition was not so likely or... plausible that one in the TV world would then go
into
films. But I think because I was so young and the type of character it was a very kind of funny but dramatic performance. And so I got a lot of attention from that. And then that kind of helped me land like Patriot Games and certain other roles.
Right.
And, it took off from there.
Did you feel like you were making your own choices or were your parents like running you? You know what I mean?
No, well, because there were certain scripts and projects that I, at the time, there was maybe a mini effort to maybe see if I would be interested in doing them. And ultimately put my foot down, like, no, I don't like that role. I don't feel comfortable doing that kind of role.
Right.
And maybe I should even say, but like Interview with the Vampire was one where I'm like, I was a kid in that kind
heavy.
Of adult type of performance was not something that I was comfortable with. So but then other times, like there were just like scripts or like maybe I was like, oh, happy to do for one reason or another. But at the same time, like I probably wasn't even aware of all of the scripts that were being sent to me until around like 11, 12.
Sure.
Know? Yeah.
So, like, okay, so then the American Beauty thing, it's huge, right?
It was a huge, huge thing all around.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was like it changed everything. Changed the way people shot television, I think, in a weird way.
Yeah, I still hear commercials with music that's
clearly
influenced from, from Newman's score. But, yeah, I mean, that project took up so much of my life for a certain, like a 2-year period. You know?
So you'd done like several movies, and you knew what you were doing.
Sure.
You were did you study acting at all?
Every day I was on set.
That was the way it worked?
That was, yeah. I didn't, you know, study under or I don't subscribe to a style or anything like that.
It was just something you picked up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. I think a lot of people do that. And there's no, like, I don't, it's weird because I've talked to actors about it. And, you know, the ones who learn that way, there's always a moment of sort of like, no, I did not.
Didn't even need to do that.
Yeah. I just pretend. I watch other people do it, and I listen, and I talk. But how did that one happen?
You know, it was a very long auditioning
Sam Mendes.
Process. Yeah, I was actually one of the first people to go in and have a meeting with him. Lester hadn't even been cast yet, and he was...
Oh, Kevin's
just,
part?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he was just in this, you know, Sam was just in this zone where he was like, well, I guess, you know, I'm here. Spielberg's my guy, and I get to see everybody, so let's see everybody.
Okay.
But for me, it was such a personal thing because I so strongly identified with Jane.
Yeah.
And well, you know, there was talk of maybe like, well, why don't you go in for Angela because it's like a flashy star-making part or whatever.
Right, right.
I really don't like Angela at all, and I really identify a little bit more with Jane, and I just feel like I could bring
Angela was played
to,
by
Mina Savari.
Yeah. What has she been doing?
She's around. She just had a show, I think. Yeah. I don't know if it's still on, but it ran for a couple of years, I think. So then I go in, I have a meeting. That's awesome. You know,
with
a month
Sam
later,
or just
with
the
Sam
casting.
And the producers and the casting.
Yeah.
And then come back for a reading just with Sam, not taped, and another meeting. And then like 5 months later, I was doing this TV movie up in Oregon called Night Ride Home. And
right.
They're like, we need to fly you down here for the screen test. You know, there's a couple of pairings, this and that. We want to get the combination of the three the three parts the right way. And So I went in, did the test, and another month and a half later, you know, I got a call saying, you know.
It was crazy that much went into putting that movie together. They knew it was going to be huge.
Yeah, it drove me nuts.
Did they know it was going to be
huge? Everybody, there was a cult-like obsession within the industry for the script itself.
I still
haven't seen... apart from maybe something on the top of the blacklist or something, I still haven't seen a reaction to a script quite like like there was for that one. Everybody and their mother wanted to, to go in for it or to be a part of it. It was just so beautifully written by Alan Ball. And it was something that was so unique for the time, or at least that's how I saw it. It was a unique style. I mean, it had so many pieces of other types of film. It had like a slight noirish thing, but it was mainly, and it also was like so character based. It was existential and full of symbolism and all of that kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, you know, this is the type of, like, movies can be like this. This is exciting, you know, it doesn't all have to be Disney or action pictures. Like, this is a real piece of art.
Yeah.
Also, the marketing for it was phenomenal. You know, Terry Press had done a great job. It was like we had a great trailer, a great poster, just every the way. Like, so I think we it was crafted to
on
elicit
all levels.
That response from an audience.
And
so it was very much by design. Could I say that we all knew how big it was going to be? I think, you know, at the time we always like to say to each other like, oh, this could be something, right? Mm-hmm. This could be really cool. And I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, come on, you know you're going to win 1,000 Oscars. But nobody could, you know, sit around saying that. But, like, that was kind of the feeling, like, this could be big.
Yeah. And you, at that point, you were savvy enough to know all this stuff was going on.
I was savvy in some areas, but completely innocent in others.
How old were you?
I was a late bloomer. We shot that when I was 16.
Yeah. And, like, Mendes was, like, was he interesting to work with?
Oh, absolutely. It was like a college professor.
So you learned things?
For sure. You could pick as much as you could try to pick his brain a little bit, you know, try to scratch the surface. He's kind of a quiet
oh, really?
Guy, yeah.
And was he on set directing or was he far away in a little video village?
I mean, he was both.
Yeah.
He was both. But the beauty about the way Conrad Hall lit was that he would light the whole world.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like you could be right up close. He kind of like created a whole space in which the actors mainly had a lot of freedom or a lot of movement. And so because physically, because of that, physically, 'cause they couldn't be like right up, you know,
yeah,
like in the water with you, so to say. But
yeah.
But he was, at, you know, second it was cut, he'd come running in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then other times he was more, you know, wouldn't necessarily watch the monitor. So it was all depending on his mood or the situation, I suppose.
I don't know. I think, I don't know why I asked you that. I think it's because, like, I can't remember who was talking, but maybe it was Carol Kane. I just, because I talked to her recently, that there was a time where, you know, the director was, there was no Video Village. They were there.
Yeah.
They were sitting there by the camera.
Yeah.
You know, doing the business.
Right.
And there was an intimacy to that, I guess.
I think it's nice to have a bit of both.
Yeah, yeah,
like
for
sure. Like a little bit of a balance. But I, if I were to, let's say, you know, take on that role, I imagine that I would have the little monitor in my hand, but also be right there.
Yeah.
You know,
have you done any directing?
Minimal, but that's the goal. I've done some shorts, online shorts, like little clips.
And how are they received?
Commercial.
You did it?
Well, I mean, they're for no budget, like gorilla. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, I had one editor and no music, no nothing. I mean, it was like bare bones stuff, just like, you know, like me dipping my toe in basically.
And you've done a commercial, you said, or no?
Yeah, well, I had done a campaign for these breath flash strips in the early 2000s. And part of the deal was that I would do these three commercials and one of them I could direct. So So one of them I did and I came up with the concept and
that's
and
the
everything.
Goal?
And that was kind of like, it's a goal. It is a goal. I've done some producing. But I think that I've always wanted to, ever since I was nine, I wanted to. You know,
direct.
Because my idea is like, well, who's in charge? Because I want to be that guy.
Right. yeah, for sure.
So it's always been the goal, but I at the same time it's not as burning as it once was. But I think that actually might propel me to achieve it even more because
if you're not so
desperate
compulsive,
for it, it's more of a if this can happen, that would be great.
But, yeah, if you can work towards
for
it.
Sure.
So like after American Beauty, do things get pretty crazy for you?
Oh yeah, for sure. Crazy. In the sense that, you know, it was a whole new level. Like I felt before that I had been maybe industry known, you know, as a kid actor, like bordering on child star or whatever, however you want to put it.
Right.
And then after that, it was more like, oh no, you just stepped into a different club.
Right.
And you know, you're touring Europe with the film and promoting it and all
of
that.
Did you go to
the
big festivals?
So we did Toronto.
Uh-huh.
We didn't really need festivals, but we went around.
Sure.
And
to promote it.
To promote it.
Yeah.
We had the premieres in London, Spain, Italy, France, all that, Germany. Kevin and the three of us did a lot of it.
Kevin
went on a tour in the States too, like the colleges and universities.
Was he all right to work with?
As an actor, he's wonderful to work with. And I only really interacted with him on set and at premieres and events and stuff.
Yeah.
So we didn't like, I mean, in the rehearsal period, we had a little time to bond and get to know each other.
Right.
But there were always, you know, Kevin's a really intelligent person and he even was a private person.
And
look, I was a 16-year-old girl.
I know.
There's just not much of an interest there for me. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not looking for anything.
But
I
think the nature of our on-screen relationship, too, was more, it kind of lent itself to a natural thing on set where we were like, we were close, but there was like a slight contentiousness but I think it was a bleeding over from the nature of the characters.
Yeah, it's like that thing we were talking about earlier in the kitchen where, you know, if you have, you know, younger parents, that the bond is sort of weird.
Right.
Like, I guess his trip was sort of a midwife trip, but it was still him trying to get something back of his youth.
Yeah, he
and,
was...
And not understanding, you know, proper grown-up boundaries or you know, or...
I think he just, like, he only... Like, I think, you know, a lot of parents get kind of they their kids reach a certain age and the parent just can't help but not understand them in a new way. It's more like, well, what happened to that wonderful 8-year-old that I, you know?
Yeah.
And it can stay weird. Based on
that. And then he's going in this like, well, what happened to my life?
You know, he's taking it a little bit on a selfish.
Yeah,
from Jane's point of view, it's a very selfish outlook that he's taking.
And like, did you find that with your folks? Were they young when they had you?
No.
They weren't?
No.
Oh, wow. So you didn't grow up with younger parents?
No, no. They were parents.
Hmm.
But they were friends, too, because they didn't talk to me like aga goo goo.
Right, yeah, yeah.
They
yeah.
were here, yeah, read this book.
Do you think that,
tell
like,
us what you think about it. Be engaged. Be, you know, and you know, and educate yourself.
Is your sense of them that, that whatever went on in the 70s was some sort of like, they were contracting after that? Like, they, that after that, whatever they'd gone through in the 60s and 70s, they're like, all right, we did that. Let's bring the kid up right.
I believe that, yeah. That's mainly.
Yeah,
I mean, definitely, I think that was the, there was, they had been through so much and seen
sure.
so much that there was a level of horror that I, by the idea that I might have to go through some,
sure.
that, you know, that was, what they had done was not for me.
Yeah, know? And I think that that happens to a lot of that generation, you know, given that, you know, not have all of them do what your parents did, but
right.
that sort of like following that, that 60s trip of like, you know, just kind of do it, man, you know, do whatever, you know, and all that liberation.
That was not the, I mean, maybe if they had been younger when I came along, or I had come
yeah.
along at
you're
an
probably,
earlier period, like say
lucky.
I was born in like
probably,
78 or
yeah.
77 or something
yeah.
like that, it might have been different. I said,
yeah.
in some
yeah.
way I got the more,
the more
standard,
conservative,
normal. Yeah.
Right. They had come to their senses.
Yeah.
After the
bit.
Insanity. A
right.
little bit.
Well, a little bit.
All right, so
they like, always have like a, you know, a radical outlook on things.
They
but,
do,
but I mean, but in a thoughtful way. You
yeah,
know, they can be reined in.
Yeah, like what? Like what's radical?
Well, I you know, I mean, I think, you know, like I said, they were incredible health nuts.
Oh right, okay.
For
yeah,
a
yeah.
long,
so you grew
time.
Up with a lot of supplements.
So, and... Well, you know, bee pollen, spirulina,
the whole
and
thing,
stuff
yeah.
like that, and then.
Yeah.
You know, but then, you know, 10 years later, they're like, oh, we're going for Chinese. You
yeah.
know, so they kind of,
yeah.
they go all over. Yeah.
Phases.
Yeah.
So during the American Beauty period, are they, is your dad managing you?
Yes, he was still, yeah. But I had, you know, I had a
big agents.
Big
team.
Yeah, I had teams.
Yeah,
I've been with a lot of different agents over
yeah,
a long
yeah.
period of time. And yeah, but he, yeah, he was, but he was never on set.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he was working out at home.
Yeah. He's yeah.
Is that, and is real it? Estate. He was,
oh, was a real
doing
estate guy.
Real estate. Dabbled. Yeah.
A lot of hustles.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I was busy, you know. Yeah. I didn't.
So what happens right after American Beauty?
Well, you know, it was kind of like sit back and
read scripts.
Just
and stuff?
Go on the roller coaster for
yeah.
a little while
right.
there. And you know, honestly, there wasn't as many scripts as I had expected.
Uh-huh.
To be flooding through.
Yeah.
And I still to this day don't know that if that was because there simply weren't that many roles.
Yeah.
To follow a performance like that
right.
up with.
Yeah.
At that time, and that's why when I shortly after the film came, not that shortly after the film came out, maybe about like 4 or 5 months after the film came out. I got the script for Ghost World.
Oh, yeah.
And it was sent to me with the graphic novel as well.
Oh,
so
yes.
I read the script first, then I read the graphic novel.
And oh, yeah.
I was completely blown away, and I'm like, this is my part. And nobody wanted me to play that part. The director didn't want me to play it. The writer didn't. They wanted somebody else. And
really?
They thought of me as a Rebecca.
Uh-huh.
And for me, that particular character did nothing for me.
Uh-huh.
And Enid was somebody that I felt that I could kind of maybe in some way hide behind and at least be able to portray her personality
yeah.
without having her personality
right.
in my own life.
Like, yeah.
But unfortunately, through playing her, she stuck with me.
Oh, really?
For a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I kind of, her outlook became my outlook for potentially a little too long.
Really?
It was just kind of, yeah, disenchanted, like kind of...
No kidding.
Just kind of lost and confused in a way. And I, you know, I think part of that is, so, you know, internal stuff.
So
but at the same time, I think it's a reaction to just like, you know, the being a young woman in that era... if you're pursuing a high-profile career,
yeah.
there only seems to be a couple of formulas
sure.
to adapt to in order to reach, let's say, that level.
Yeah.
And what it took, those formulas were not so attractive to me.
Right.
And
you got cynical.
I got, yeah, a little.
So, because you did a
and
few...
And I just also, I felt like maybe it was unfair that so many of my opinions had to be like corrected or adjusted
uh-huh.
or something.
Yeah.
And so that was, I can be stubborn from time to time. So.
Right. But the implication was you didn't know better and that other people knew better.
I think it's more of like a calm down. It's okay. Just do this and everything will be fine.
So that was the way they framed it.
Well, it's in your best interest. But it's a proverbial. It's like it was everybody.
Yeah.
Everyone's just like, that's just more of a shoo-shoo-poo-poo.
Right.
You know?
But there were still those formulas that they were trying to put in.
Those were the ones. And trying to forge a new formula was something that needed to be corrected, not embraced.
Right. What were the old formulas in your mind?
Cute girl, funny girl, tall, skinny, Jessica Alba type of thing. Uh-huh. Like, no, there's anything wrong with that. I'm not critiquing it. I'm like, well, okay, but maybe, you know, I'm not going to grow a foot taller and stay the same weight. So what can I do?
But it looks like, though, you did a couple of movies in between American Beauty and Ghost World that seemed like kind of trying different things out, right?
Yeah, actually, right after American Beauty... Ghost World was my next film that I shot. And then after that, it took a while to come out.
Oh, is that how it worked?
It took a while to come out. Yeah. And then after Ghost World, I was more experimental and I was trying things. And I was more like, oh, I don't care about the budget or who's like all the things where they say like, oh, you only want to work with certain people and blah, blah, blah.
So
I didn't care about any of that. I was just going by the material.
Yeah. So the sensibility of Ghost World. I mean, because that is a pretty, you know, that. I mean, it was an experimental movie, really, I think. You know, I've read Klaus for a long time, you know, and I've interviewed that guy. And Zweigoff is like, he's kind of a pain in the ass, but he's all right, you know.
He cracks me up.
Yeah, he's funny.
I cannot get through a conversation with him without having a stomachache for the next day because he's laughing too hard.
He's an odd, interesting guy.
Self-deprecating person I've ever met.
But there was something about the nature of Klaus and about, you know, those characters that really... They changed your point of view, huh?
For sure. Huh. Or I think they highlighted a point of view that I maybe already had.
Yeah.
But they put a spotlight on it.
And also,
it allowed me to fully expand on it.
Right, right. In retrospect, do you think that was destructive?
No, I had a blast. Yeah. I loved making that film. I mean, maybe
by just being
following,
cynical,
you know, afterwards, maybe being turned into like, you know, having the personality not so dissimilar to Terry's himself was maybe not ideal for an 18-year-old girl,
right.
And I might have lost some friendships and, you know, stopped some guys from approaching me. But maybe that's
a good thing.
That's a good thing, yeah. Probably.
Were you and Scarlett friends ever?
Very tight.
Yeah.
Very tight.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, we were working like this. I was just graduating high school, and she was still in school, so our time together wasn't as much as it maybe could have been.
She was still in high school?
Exactly the same age. I think she was 15.
No kidding.
15.
Wow, I didn't even realize that.
Was that her first movie? No. She had been in something like Manny and Lowe and some others. But it was her first, I think, you know, big, chunky, bordering on adult role.
Yeah. Well, it's so weird. There's people that I mean, I know it from my own life. Like, because when I look at the cast of some of the movies you've been in, some people, like, you know, had hard lives. And some people aren't with us anymore. It's heavy, man.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that Renfro was in Ghost World. I'm trying to remember who he was in that.
He was Josh. He was kind of a side crush of Enid's.
Oh yeah.
But his character was not that you know, wasn't featured that much, but it was essential to the story.
Yeah, and Wes too is like had trouble, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I worked with Wes, that hadn't. I mean, maybe there might have been beginnings of it,
right.
But that hadn't.
Right.
It,
yeah.
It hadn't, you know, became what it did. But when I was working with Renfro, it was already.
Yeah,
at a shocking place. I found where he was at just in his life to be kind of shocking.
Yeah, it was the first time you'd seen that.
It was that bad. It was the first time I had seen it that bad.
Right.
I mean, I had heard things about other people, or
right.
You know, I was all when I was a kid, I could always tell the difference between the kids who wanted to be there and the kids who didn't.
Yeah,
and that was always like, oof, God, that sucks. You know.
Ah. Yeah.
But for him, it was more like, it was kind of a cautionary. I was like, wow. And also, I was shocked that anybody had let it gotten to that point.
Right.
I mean, his handler,
right.
that this I don't know, the state or insurance or something that had him with was his provider.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, really? Yeah. It's so weird how those people find people. That it's a whole shadow business, you know, to people that have those kind of problems. There's just these people that service them.
Well, he was incredibly vulnerable, too, just because he had no support system.
So young,
support
too.
Network. And, yeah.
Sad.
He had come from a very disastrous starting place.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Did you guys remain friends after that until he, you know?
You know, honestly, not that much.
Yeah.
We didn't. His situation scared me. I really thought he was a really sweet kid.
Yeah.
But there was something about his energy that I didn't want to engage
get
too
sucked
much.
In. Yeah. So you were able to avoid that?
A little bit.
Drugs and whatnot?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I didn't. I never went off the deep end with anything, you know?
And that's good.
That's not. There was always certain journeys that in life that I knew I just really didn't want to take.
That's good that you didn't.
And and so I mean I haven't been a perfect angel.
Yeah.
But none of the hard stuff.
Right.
Ever.
Well, you didn't lose control.
Right.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Thanks.
So now after Ghost World, I mean it seems like you work a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And like, are you happy?
I am, because I had taken, you know, like you said, people can ask, you know,
what happened
what
to her?
What is, you know, right. And that's fair. But, you know, a lot of the stuff that I didn't reach the
right. Exactly.
The
that happens all the time.
Size of other of other things. And I did them for different reasons. And then at a certain point in my life, it became, for me, I felt like the best thing that I could do just to keep growing and evolving as a person, and you know, try to hold on to some sanity.
Yeah,
was to get my education. You know, after graduating high school, my career was in such a place that college wasn't even
right. You're
a
working.
Thought. I was like, yeah, and but you know, I really wanted to educate myself, so I got my pre-law degree.
Yeah,
and it's a 4-year program, and I did it in about 3.
Where at?
Kaplan, which is like the Phoenix. It's the better Phoenix.
Okay, yeah. So online,
it's online, but online gets a little bit of a bad rap. But I've spoken to teachers who have said it's actually harder than
and also
than
like it's
you, it. And the, it kept the, me away from the culture. Also, I was older, so
from
I didn't want to go
Hollywood culture.
The college party culture. You know, I didn't. I feel like when you're that age, you go to college for something other than
no.
The
I
classes.
Think people who really want it, they really want it. Like you want to learn.
Yeah,
like if
and
you're,
I
yeah.
went for that.
Yeah.
So, and it was I really enjoyed it. It was rigorous, but I very much enjoyed it. And but it just brought me back to realizing that I whereas maybe I was open minded to a major life shift and taking on a new career, a new direction.
Yeah.
That I actually didn't ultimately want that, and I still wanted to be part of the storytelling process because I believe that, I don't know, call me whatever, but I believe that film and TV is consumed by largely formative minds.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's a power in that.
Of course.
And with that comes a responsibility to shape those minds in as open a way as possible. That brought me back to, I thought, well, okay, well, maybe I'll write. So I wrote a play.
Oh, yeah?
In a month, I wrote a screenplay in a year and a half.
after you decided the pre-law?
After I finished my pre-law, there was like, oh, okay, well, either go in for your JD and, you know, start working on studying for the bar and all that.
Yeah.
Or skip it.
What's the play about?
A first date.
Yeah,
but
called?
It's a first date with the on pause.
Okay,
it's about a first date, but it's got flashbacks of previous relationships, and those previous relationships all explain why this first date is going so horrifically awkwardly.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Now, did you put it up?
I came close, but I got distracted with other things. And
did you do a reading of it or anything?
No. I mean, I had a producing partner, and but then something happened with a theater that we were going to do it at, and then I just, you know, after that, then it was become like, well, you know, I'd also really still like to act as well. So mm-hmm. it was more of a hunt for representation and stuff like that. So,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, in turn. Oh, so you needed to get re-represented?
Oh, well, maybe. Yeah, I did.
Oh,
I did. Yeah.
Yeah. So the going to school and the writing the play got you out of the game a bit. So you had to go back, get some new
people.
I
was still being approached,
yeah.
but I just was, you know, no, this is what I'm doing now.
Uh-huh.
And then it actually kind of needed to come from me
right.
to decide to try the acting stuff again.
Do you find that, so are you writing for young adults?
Well, I mean, I feel like when I was an audience member mm-hmm. at 15, 16, I was always looking for what the 25-year-olds were watching.
Sure. Yeah.
And so I want to talk to those kids.
Yeah. I don't even understand kids. I don't have them. And
I don't understand them either.
I don't know where they're at.
No, but I feel like it's our duty to talk to them anyway.
Of course. You know, sometimes they find me, you know,
right.
you know, some college kids, but still, like, I don't, like...
Oh, I'm sure you're bigger than you think you are with college kids.
I don't know. You know, no? I go perform at places in college towns. And
yeah.
Like, the ones that know me and like me are definitely kind of special, sensitive, tormented, a little brighter than the rest. I don't know. You know, it's not the across-the-board college appeal.
Maybe those are our people.
No, they're fine with me. It's okay with me. So, like, once you get back into the game, are you frustrated now, or you feel okay?
Not so much,
yeah.
Because I don't have a lot of the, you know, I feel like a disenchantment and a disappointment or a frustration comes parallel to the level of expectation
uh-huh.
that one has.
But I mean, like,
and so my expectation level might have been one thing a while ago.
Right
now, it's a little different. And
yeah.
so I don't feel the anxiety that's coming with it, or am I achieving my goals quick enough? And
right.
I don't do the comparison, you know,
are you
like
good just...
basing my happiness on like, oh, well, so-and-so's doing so much better and blah, blah, blah.
No,
like,
I don't do that anymore.
I never was like that.
Never?
Not really. I mean,
I wish I wasn't. Briefly,
when I was in my early 20s,
right.
and every actor has their one.
Of
They're
course.
Like, you're that person, you know. And I might have had a couple of those, but... But I just don't have time for that anymore.
I've still got mine, and I'm doing fine.
Right.
It's fucked up, man. Right? I mean, it's like, how do you get to a point of self-acceptance?
It's a little, I don't think you have to have self-acceptance in order to, like, just let the other part of it go. And it's, you know, some people will say, well, in order to succeed, you have to be competitive. You know, you hear this in sports all the time.
It's all
about the competition. But the competition. But I don't see it that
but
way.
But that, well, with sports, you know, it's sort of like,
well,
I
yeah.
run faster than you.
You have to win a game.
There's,
exactly.
Right. There's
yeah.
a million different, you know, problems
right.
in being competitive in this business. What does that even mean? Do you know what I mean?
I hear you.
It's fucking nuts. But, right. like, I still get jealous, even though, like, I know in my mind that I don't want what they have. I probably couldn't do what they do. All that shit, you know, but in order to sort of assess that and not use those as weapons against myself,
right.
like, well, why can't I do it?
You yeah, know? Yeah, it's true.
It's complicated.
It's complicated,
God damn
and
it.
It's a constant struggle because I, even to this day, I'll have days where like, well, what the fuck does anyone want from, like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
What, I got to stand on stage naked for an hour and a half? What do you want?
When does that conversation happen?
No, I just, it's yeah. like, it's an example
yeah.
of like, what does it take
yeah.
to be, you know, like, because you hear so much, and everybody hears this, oh, we love her.
Oh, yeah.
But then it's like, oh, it's not this, and it's not that, and
ugh.
that's every single actor out there has, you know, like, oh, excellent, amazing, not right for this.
Yeah, right, exactly. So, that's why I never did the acting thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I never pursued it because I couldn't handle that shit.
Right.
The amount of rejection you guys take?
Right. Yeah.
I can't.
Well, and then of course in our mind is it's like, you're right, but remember when I described myself as an actor?
Yeah.
Like it means that I can like, give me a note, give
yeah,
me an adjustment, I'll
yeah.
make it.
Right,
but
exactly.
But you don't get the amount of adjustment notes.
What would make you happy? Like in terms of like I'm not happy, but like what kind of part, what are you looking for as an actor at this point?
I've always kind of, even when I was, you know, doing different things, I always wanted to, I always saw myself as like, that I couldn't wait to get to like the older Betty Davis era, you
mm-hmm.
know, the Frances McDormand.
Right.
I always was like, I'm looking forward to that or something.
Yeah.
So I didn't exactly know what I want. I just knew that a lot of what I was reading wasn't really clicking with me.
Right. But you did this, you were in that new, that movie with the last black man in San Francisco?
Is yes.
That, and was, how was that?
I loved it. I love that script. It's a beautiful poem to the city, which is my favorite city in California.
It is like a poem.
It is, yeah. Because it's poetry.
The whole thing is. That's the only way I could take it in when I started to watch the groove of it, and I'm like, all right, this is what this is.
Right, and the score is phenomenal, and Joe's eye and some of his shots and concepts were just amazing, and so I was just happy to be a part of that. You know, I'm also on, like, right now I'm on season 10 of The Walking Dead, and I just finished shooting a film in Oklahoma called 13 Minutes. So
Oklahoma?
I mean, there's, like, Oklahoma City, yeah.
How was that?
It was, they're starting to do a lot more there.
Did you hang out with Wayne Coyne?
I don't know.
From the Flaming Lips? Did you go over
the drummer from the Flaming Lips was the boyfriend of our hair. Our key hair.
Okay.
So he actually helped out with wardrobe, oddly enough.
Well,
on
Wayne,
set. But, yeah,
Wayne, you know, the lead singer of the Flaming Lips, he's got a whole little world over there.
Mm-hmm. And they have a little alley street named after them.
And there's
I walked by it all the time.
There's a place with a giant. It's a lot of weirdness. A lot of the King's Mouth. He's got some giant mouth you can go in, and
there's
a womb room, and like he's got a
trippy.
Whole. Yeah, it's definitely trippy. So you didn't hang out there though.
I didn't make it that. Yeah. I was in and out.
Uh-huh.
You know, on that one, it was a very
What's
much
that
an ensemble
about 13 minutes?
Piece. It's about before, during, and after a tornado hits in a very small town, and it's like these intersecting lives type of thing.
Oh,
it's it's a nice, clean.
Fun,
yeah.
And what is it like being on the never-ending Walking Dead?
I only started season 10.
Yeah.
So
it's amazing. It was
such an adjustment for me to be back on a TV show.
I haven't even watched it. Were you were you zombie fighting?
I did a little bit. I did a little bit of that.
Yeah.
One thing that's nice about it coming in on it so late is that it runs like a machine.
It does. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So they know exactly.
But
what
it's a very
doing.
Scattered, difficult, laborious, intense, filthy, disgusting
machine.
Humidity-addled machine.
Where does it shoot?
South of Atlanta. Georgia.
Right.
So in the summer, no less.
Hot.
Just a teensy.
Yeah. And you were staying in Atlanta?
No. Too far to commute because the hours of the days are so long. They're typically 14-hour days.
Right.
So you wind up staying in this little town called either Sonoya. I don't know if you say it's Sonoya or Sonoya.
Yeah.
It's spelled Sonoya, but I hear people say Sonoya. So anyway, you either stay there, which is like 10 minutes from the set, which is like 300 acres, or Peachtree City, which is where I was, which
right.
is like just under a half hour drive from set.
Yeah, I was there for a couple weeks doing a thing. It's okay. It's an okay city, but I guess you weren't really in it.
I like Atlanta in the winter, like the fall, winter,
right.
spring.
When it's not disgusting and sticky and hot. Mm. And what else do you have coming up?
Like I said, 13 minutes, and I did just option a script that I have in front of some people's eyes that I would be directing, in.
Yeah,
and it's pilot season, so anything can happen.
So you go out to pilots? You go out for the pilot season?
Not which certain ones.
Isn't pilot season like ongoing now?
Right, but it's like the original pilot season now
right.
and then. But the streaming pilot season is a yearly.
Oh, so this is.
But it's just like the big fives.
Right. You know. So this is really.
Or in cable.
So you've been going out on auditions?
Here and there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in that between of like you're either meeting or audition, depending on the project.
Would you
and
do
the
like
people.
A big three camera thing?
I would. Mm. I would. I'm not against it.
Like, you know, the three camera thing never goes away.
Well, they even, I think they did like The Ranch. And I'm like, wow, the multicam on streaming.
It went
why?
For a while. I talked to Ashton about that.
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of interesting the way they did that. You know, like I never, like he, because it ran, I think, longer than anyone expected and people liked it, obviously.
Yeah, it was really, it was very popular.
I think they just did the last season. But it's weird that
That was a new thing because it was, not that I watched too much of the show, but Sam Elliott is also my manager. So, you know, he's a fellow client, was a fellow client.
It's with your management.
And so I heard about the show and all of that. And from what I understand it, it was multicam and it was a comedy, but it also had genuinely dramatic
elements.
Well,
that's the thing
that was
interesting that they balanced this thing because it did have the joke-to-joke business.
Right.
But then they dealt with, you know, heavier things. And Ashton said, you know, they knew they got into a system of shooting that because they knew that you could you couldn't do that in the flow of the show with an audience.
I think I heard that episode. That's right. She was saying like they would shoot some in front of the audience,
yeah,
and then
the serious
some not,
stuff,
and then
right.
go back and forth.
It was smart.
The different levels. That was really. I mean, it explained to me how that something like that would work out. So.
Yeah, because like I don't think I'd seen it work like that before. Mm-hmm. You know that you get that weird kind of laugh tracky thing,
right?
But they instead of like relying on the audience just to make the shift,
right.
They were able to isolate the things they knew they couldn't, or they prepped the audience in a different way.
It sounds like they might have created a solution to the problem I always had as an audience member with the, you know, filmed in front of a live audience thing, which was that for the dramatic moments, they never seemed to go in for a close-up at all. I'm like, well, how are you supposed to know how dramatic this really is?
Right.
If the camera's still way back here,
and
the audience is still going to laugh in 5 seconds. Like, that's not going to work for me. Like, I'm not buying the drama. This is just coming off as really bad.
Right.
So it sounds like maybe he found the happy medium with all of that. And, man, good, I mean,
I watched a couple episodes and it seemed to work, you know?
Sure.
So what's this, in terms of directing, what has to happen for that? For your project to option, what do you got? You
stars have to realign, and no.
Do you have to get? You want to act in it too, or no?
Not this one. Not the one that I just optioned.
So you're trying to connect people to it. You're trying to get people.
Yeah,
into
you shop it?
It
around. You know, you take on the duties of a producer, and you gotta get the money, honey.
Yeah, exactly. And what do you do for fun?
I watch a lot. I read a lot. I mean, not I read a lot. Online, I'd like to stop and go back to my book reading stuff.
Yeah.
But I do. I like any historical biographies. I bike ride. We ski.
You do.
I just try to keep as physical. You know, walk.
I like to ski. I haven't skied in a long
time. You know,
time.
I maybe play a couple of stupid games on my phone.
Yeah, sure.
But I mean, that's more like when you're on set and you know, just kind of like in between and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, I wish I did more game playing on the phone. I just seem to get lost in it, you know, with the news and everything else.
I do too, but I feel like if you're on the news, they try to steer you, or at least my phone tries to steer me. To like celebrity gossip or something.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Or like, you know, oh, what's wrong with their toe? Or, you know, I mean,
And
I don't like any of that.
Yeah, no, I get sucked right into the darkness of
Right. I like hopping around and like and trying to find different news sources like AFP or, you know, or then I find myself going into groups and finding on, like, I do like online. Activism and all that, you know, signed every petition in the world.
Good. Maybe that'll help.
Absolutely nothing.
Who knows? Well, where do you ski at?
Just because it's local, mainly Big Bear.
Big Bear,
Mammoth is great too, but just a little further away.
You've been skiing your whole life?
No, I only started started learning when I was 34.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You like it?
So it's been like three, four years.
Fun.
I love it. I'm still developing my legs, but I really love it.
But you went with skis, not snowboard. Snowboard.
I know, only because.
Does your husband ski?
I feel like, yes, he does. Yeah. He's actually the one who taught me.
Right.
And I feel like. You know, these boarders, they got
snotty
little shitheads.
Yeah. It's hard to pick that shit up, too.
It's a little harder.
When you get older.
Yeah.
It's a whole different groove.
Right.
Yeah, how long have you been married?
A year and 2 months and a couple of days.
And how long did you know him before?
Oh, we've been together just under 5 years.
How's it going?
It's great. Love it. and a total shock to me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I was not a... I was a never marry, never kid kind of person, you know?
Mm.
And then I just changed with this one, so.
Good.
Yeah.
As long as you're happy.
Yeah, for sure.
Good talking to you, Thora.
Thank you.
That's it. She was a little concerned about how that might have come off. I thought it was fine. She's currently on The Walking Dead, which airs Sunday nights on AMC. And now you can listen to me wrestle with this fucking... Les Paul Jr. and my fucking 53 Fender Deluxe amp. Me wrestling with these old fucking men at my own age.
Boomer lives.